welcome to the Two Coffee Teachers podcast. My name is Alex Parker.
And I'm Josh Tweary. We are two young educators who want to contribute to our field. On this podcast, we talk about education and relevant content to apply in our classrooms. It's our hope that this podcast can encourage educators without needing that second cup of coffee.
So for all of our new listeners, welcome to the show. We are so excited to have you. And for all of our returning listeners and participants, we are thrilled that you are giving us a chance and that we hope that you are excited about what we have to share with the world about the field of education.
So if you listen to our pilot, you might have heard that we are tackling a big topic this week. We're going to be tackling performance assessments, performance tasks, grasps, all that stuff. The whole lot of it. But before we get into that, Alex, I think you have some education news, some policy updates for us, for our listeners.
Absolutely. So for each show that we do, we'll probably have one or two news segments that might be applicable to our field. And then also have maybe another policy update or two that we can talk about and see how that might affect future teachers or teachers that are in the field.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is our news update for today, and this event happened yesterday. It's one that's made me a little bit upset, to be perfectly honest. So you may or may not have heard about this already. It's been circling Twitter. Even President Obama has tweeted about it. It's on all of the major news outlets. But in Texas, there was a high school freshman. This happened, we were recording on a Wednesday, so this happened Tuesday. And this high school freshman, a young man by the name of Ahmed Mohammed, and he was detained and arrested for bringing a homemade invented clock to school. And the reason he was arrested and detained, there were no files charged, or there are no charges that were filed eventually, which is definitely the right thing to do. But the student was detained because the teachers and the administrators thought that he had a bomb and that he had made a bomb, where in reality it was just a 14-year-old student that was really excited about engineering and science and technology that he wanted to show his teachers this cool thing that he made at home.
That's hard, man. That's complicated. I pulled up Obama's tweet. He said, President Obama tweeted from the POTUS Twitter account, "Cool clock, Ahmed. Want to bring it to the White House? We should inspire more kids like you to like science. It's what makes America great."
Absolutely. It's really important that we get kids excited about this. And it's really disheartening if you're a young student who comes into school and all of a sudden you're mistaken for trying to harm everyone.
That's stereotyping.
It absolutely is. And I think it's obvious that because this student did say, he did tell investigators and teachers that he was a Muslim, it would not surprise me if there was some serious stereotyping going on. And that's really unfortunate for a student to be misinterpreted by people that are supposed to help you throughout your time in school and people that you should be looking up to. And instead, they're scared of you.
And now he feels immediately judged. You know, he feels immediately judged by his teachers and his school he's just a kid. He just wants to explore science. He just wants to make things. And man, that's so unfortunate.
So what are your thoughts on how this might be important for our future teachers? When you go into the classroom, even at your practicum experience, you have a class full of kids of different religious affiliations, kids of different race and socioeconomic backgrounds.
Right.
How would you handle that situation, or what would you want to tell your kids if that got brought up in your classroom?
If this particular scenario,
or say you go into your practicum tomorrow and a kid brings this event up. He goes, "Hey, Mr. Tweary, we had I heard about on the news that a kid got arrested because teachers thought that he had a bomb and he was Muslim."
Yeah. Wow. I think it's important to clarify for students, especially younger students, that stereotypes do not define people in general. America's been very hurt in dealing with a lot of extremists, and that's caused a lot of issues in how we react to people, right, in stereotyping. And, like, I can understand where the wound comes from, but it's hurtful, right? It's not, that doesn't make it right to do that. I think one of the things that, you know, you and I, we teach social studies, And one of the big themes of social studies in general is conflict, but also, like, how can we respond to that? How do we interact with that? And as social studies teachers who want to teach skills, we encourage them to, you know, to make peace, to resolve problems, you know, confront issues. So that's the direction I would go. I'm sure there's a ton of different ways you could approach that. I'm sure you could talk about that for a long time in class.
Absolutely. It's very important. I think the big meat of this is that it's really important that we don't generalize people. Just like all Muslims are not terrorists, all police officers are not these dangerous and power-hungry people.
Right.
All people, are, for the most part, of course, you get your 0.1% of people that
extremists. You're outliers, right? Yeah.
Yes.
But that doesn't define people in general.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's really important that we continue to teach this idea of tolerance once we get into the classroom.
Absolutely.
So that's my one piece of news that I really wanted to share and talk about. But I do have two policy-related updates that we also want to talk about before we get into performance assessments.
Great.
So the first one would be a technology-related plan that's going on in New York City.
All right.
So this morning, according to a New York Times report, Mayor Bill de Blasio brought forth a plan to establish a 10-year deadline for the city school system to have enough trained teachers in computer science so that curriculums can incorporate technology disciplines that would reach every student. So this is really important in New York, at least, because only 10% of the schools in New York offer computer science classes. So I think their goal is to really broaden different skill sets. And while broadening those skill sets that are going to be very necessary once these students get out into the real world and they're looking for jobs, but I think the New York City public education system would really hope that these classes will also engage students in future topics or in other topics too, in other disciplines with math, science, reading, or any other class.
Okay, so just to clarify, This is not a plan to ensure that all the teachers know how to use Google Drive. This is computer science classes. Right?
So
they would be teachers that could teach classes in computer science. Is that what you're saying?
Not only would it enhance the technological endorsements for teachers. So yes, like for example, learning how to use Google Drive will definitely be part of that training, but with the focus of computer skills based classes, so for example with program or maybe using Microsoft Word or GIS ArcMap or different other kinds of programs that can be useful.
Okay, I'm starting to understand. That's really surprising me that only 10% of schools in that area offer computer science classes. I haven't been back to my own high school in a long time. I don't know how far they've developed, but I would expect that would become more of a priority, especially as coding is becoming more relevant as well. The mayor of New York really wants to broaden those skill sets. That's really practical.
Yeah,
right?
It's very necessary. It is very surprising too that there aren't that many teachers that have the necessary training to teach this. I'm sure that a lack of resources or maybe reinvesting money into promoting these computer-related classes and technology-related courses,
right,
it should be a priority too.
Yeah.
So with our last update before we get into our performance test conversation, so this is going on in Washington State. So just last week, the Washington State Supreme Court ruled in a 6-3 decision that charter schools were unconstitutional because they were not considered common schools. So therefore, because they're not common schools, they are much different than public schools, they're no longer subject to funding through taxpayer dollars. So this was a bit scary for a lot of families that have their son or daughters attending charter schools. That was about 1,200 to 1,300 kids that would have been affected by this decision, because there was a lot of fear that charter schools would have to shut down with no more funding, especially since classes had already started when this ruling came out.
And that would obviously displace those 1,200 plus students from, you know, right at the top of the school year.
Mm-hmm. So, wow. Doing a little bit of research right before we started recording, It confirmed that no school has shut down yet because of this decision. All of these schools are currently funded through at least this calendar academic year.
Okay.
But there is still some concern about what's going to happen in the future.
Okay, so thinking beyond Washington State, because that was particularly for the state of Washington, not Washington, D.C., the state of Washington, are there ramifications that – is this a precedent that could be established in other states? Like, is that a valid fear?
It most certainly could be. I mean, if – at least looking through the looking through the opinion of the court justices – they ruled that charter schools are devoid of local control. So that basically means that with a public school, those schools are affected through voters, right? So the voters are the individuals that elect the school board. They are the ones that are paying the taxes. And because these charter schools are run by appointed boards or nonprofit organizations, they're not subject to those local voter controls, so they can't qualify as common schools.
Interesting.
So, of course, we also had a little bit of a conversation about, well, what is defined as a charter school? And at least in the state of Washington, it's not like a magnet school, where magnet schools are still funded by the school district, and any kid or kids that are in that specific school zone will attend, but then the magnet school also takes on additional kids for special endorsements or special programs. It's not like that.
Okay.
So these charter schools in the state of Washington are all privately funded. They're all nonprofit organizations, and they all have those self-appointed leadership committees.
Gotcha.
So that's ultimately what's going to separate the two. So if there are a lot of other charter schools around the nation that are in that similar situation, depending on what the state laws are, it's going to be interesting to see how that could affect those schools.
Man, so that's an interesting thing for our listeners, not just in Virginia where we are, from Washington where this court ruling happened, but around the country as well. Any other updates for us?
No, that would be it. So I guess this is time to move into the most exciting part of the episode, which is our performance assessment conversation.
Yeah. So every week, every episode, we want to tackle a big topic, something that's relevant, something that's prevalent to our listeners and to our classrooms and to the education in general. So for our first not pilot episode, we did choose performance assessments to talk about. So I figured that we would start by just defining what a performance assessment is.
Sure, absolutely.
So a performance assessment, when I think of performance assessment, I think authentic assessment. I think not explanation, but a way for a student to show what they know. So maybe a multiple choice test or a standardized test would show that they understand content, but this would require the students to actively engage with the question, have a question, and create an answer. Right?
I really like what you say about active engagement, because you mentioned multiple choice or standardized tests. Sometimes, and some teachers may consider an essay to be a performance assessment, but I really like what you say about getting engaged. When I think about a performance assessment, I think about an assignment where students can be emotionally appealed to, or where a student can become really invested in the assignment. Mm-hmm. So when they're starting to get really intertwined with that assignment and they really care about that assignment and they're able to do it in a way that best fits their learning style, that's what I consider to be a performance assessment.
Awesome. Yeah.
So lot of similarities there.
Yeah, I agree. Let's talk about what kind of constitutes a performance assessment, what kind of entails. So one of the things we mentioned is a grasp. I think a grasp is a really cool way for teachers to devise a performance assessment. You want to go into GRASP? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So GRASP actually originated through the Understanding by Design Guide, right? So this was written by a man named Grant Wiggins, and he was a very influential individual with developing different techniques for teachers to be more successful and for teachers to be able to allow their students to succeed to the best of their ability. So with a GRASP, That's an acronym. So it stands, the G stands for the goal. So that's ultimately your objective.
Mm-hmm.
The role. So maybe the student takes on a specific role. The audience. So obviously who or what is that assignment appealing to? The situation, the product or the performance, and the purpose. So that's ultimately what you're creating and why you're creating some sort of assignment. Then ultimately the standards and the criteria for success. So then when you finish up with what, when you tell the student what to do, why you need to do it, and who you're doing this assignment or situation for, you need to set up your criteria for what the student needs to do. So this is essentially your rubric.
Right. And the rubric is really important because it's not like a multiple choice question, right, where you get it right or you get it wrong. If you're being assessed on something that could be, you could put anything down for it, you really need to understand, how am I going to be assessed for this assessment? So the rubric is really important. To that, another thing I really wanted to add to grasps was that a grasp, like, they can be fun. Like, they can be interesting scenarios, right? Even more than that, they become super applicable to the real world, right? So if you create something that connects to the real world, a student can be like, you know what? Like, so, okay, we use history as an example a lot and social studies as an example a lot. Because that's kind of our background. But an example might be that if you wanted to do a performance assessment that dealt with prehistory or some, you know, like an old history that would require an archaeologist, you could do a grasp as an archaeologist. And that would be like the real world situation that has to present their material. Now, not every student wants to be an archaeologist, so that's maybe not super applicable to the fact that I'm not going to be an archaeologist one day, but students can say, wow, like, that's a real life situation. Like, that's something that somebody deals with and thinks about. And we really promote those problem solving skills.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the really big advantages of these, is that they do promote using skills to solve problems. Multiple choice questions, like, the world doesn't give you A, B, C, D when life happens. You know what I mean? So, it's a physical manifestation when you complete a performance assessment of your learning, right? It's a physical representation of a problem and using what I've learned and the skills I've developed to solve that problem. That being said, I think there are things about it that aren't always great, because you don't see performance assessments all the time. Like, how often do you run into performance assessments in your classes? Like, how often do you have the opportunity for them?
Well, at least in our college classes, probably very little.
Yeah.
Almost not at all. And in high school, I think teachers definitely did their best to incorporate them a little bit more. But of course, I remember you were discussing the other day about how teachers are so pressured to not necessarily assess life skills, right? But they're judged on whether or not a student was able to meet a significant standard and
right.
how they were able to demonstrate their knowledge on that standard. And
right.
the way that most states and school systems assess that is through the traditional multiple choice, short answer, and extended response sort of assessment. But I think it is definitely realistic that teachers can take those standards and then, or take multiple standards and then create a special type of task or assignment where students can get really excited about them. They can demonstrate their knowledge, but they don't even know that it has anything to do with these standards. So it's really important from the teacher's perspective to look over your standards, look over your curriculum, and then try and figure out what kind of skills can maybe be intertwined and can be incorporated with those content-based standards. And then they can use that combination to create a really fun and exciting assignment for the students.
Yeah, I think the big thing you're really hitting on there is how do we provide authentic learning in a standardized testing society,
mm-hmm.
right? You're right that a lot of teachers, they are evaluated on how well their students do on these assessments. And it's hard not to be tempted to just teach to that assessment, because if all of your students pass, then you still look great, even if your students may not have been able to apply the content that you taught them, right?
Now, we had a voicemail that was actually quite similar to what we're talking about, especially with the grasp. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you wanna go ahead and play that for us?
All right, so just for all of our listeners, keep in mind that you can feel free to call in, leave a voicemail to our show. Our phone number is 443-300-8908. Keep in mind, we'll make sure to
repeat that
at the end of the show. But let's go ahead and listen to our voicemail. If you chime in and give us feedback or have a question about a certain topic, then you can end up on our show. So here's our very first voicemail.
Hey, Two Coffee Teachers. For your next podcast that you're recording tomorrow on performance tasks, I was just wondering if you guys could talk a bit about grasps, what your feelings are about them, and how you think they compare to other performance tasks that are out there. Thank you. Goodbye.
That was our very first voicemail. That was a good question. We've kind of touched on that already. I think that came from our friend.
One of our colleagues, for sure. That sounded familiar.
Yeah. From now on, when you leave a voicemail, leave us your name. Let us know who you are. Maybe where you're from, too. Maybe what you teach, what you're about. A little bit about you so we know who's calling. I know that voice. I think that was our good friend, Dom. Thanks for the question, Dom. That was a good one. We've touched a bit on grasps already. So his question was, how do we feel about grasps? And I think what we're kind of hitting on right now is that we really value it as an assessment because it's very authentic to the student if they've been learning skills and applying their knowledge. The problem is, how do we apply a grasp and apply that often in a society or education system that's so bent on standardized testing? We really like it. We think it's really valuable. My answer to that, Dom, would be to supplement the grasp with your standardized testing. So if you feel pressured as an educator that you need to make sure your students understand and they're ready to take a standardized exam, have them take that exam and then add a grasp or some other authentic assessment at the end of that. That way you can see, okay, my students are going to do great here, here, and here on our standardized test, right? But you can also see, did my students really absorb that information? Do my students really know what to do with that information? And when you have that authentic assessment, probably at the end of your summative assessment, your students you'll be able to look at it and say, you know what, my students really got it on the test, like they knew how to take the test with that information, but they didn't really know how to apply it. And then you as an educator can go back for the next unit and say, okay, what do I need to do what can I do to complement both of these? Because both of these are important, right? Do you have anything you would want to speak into that, Alex?
No, I absolutely agree. I think the reality is of education is that standardized tests are there and they're going to be a part of our field. Whether you're a future elementary school teacher, a middle school educator, or a high school educator, standardized tests are going to be a part of our field. We have to accept that.
And standards are valuable. Like, they're not a bad thing at all.
But what you can do is, especially knowing that your students are going to have to take that standardized test at the end of the year, it's okay to incorporate maybe old questions from a standardized test or different pieces of that when you have your mid-unit quizzes or your end-of-unit assessment. But I think it's also important that you somehow tie that into their own life. Figure out what your students are interested in. Ask those personal questions. Find the connections. Get to know your students. And then that's going to really help teachers not waste a lot of time and not take a lot of time creating these performance assessments and graphs.
That are valuable for their students, absolutely. And you know what? If you do a great one, these performance assessments can take a while. They can take a long time. They can be a big chunk out of your scheduled class time. And I recognize that we all have some tough pacing guides, right? We've got a lot of content to cover. But think about when you're planning your year, you're planning your unit, you're planning your lessons for that week, what would be the value of this performance assessment? What would be the value of preparing my students for this kind of assessment? Really thinking, you know, as a teacher who thinks beyond like the standards, like what can we do to prepare our students for an authentic world, creating scenarios that they may encounter, using skills they may encounter.
I remember seeing a reading the other day how there is a quote, I believe it was from John Dewey, and he was discussing how education isn't a one-time thing. It's a lifelong experience, right?
Absolutely.
So kids don't go through education and then they're done with it once they hit high school graduation or they hit their college graduation. Education is something that happens your entire life. And if you're able to create performance assessments or graphs where students are really excited about them, they will remember those and they will use what they learned from their assignments and talk about them to their colleagues, to their future kids.
Right. There's a big ripple effect that really.
Absolutely. So I think I really value what we've learned so far about performance tasks and performance assessments. I think as a teacher that's going into the field soon, I think it's very important that we make our best effort to try and incorporate these. And hopefully teachers around the country are listening, or to all of our other listeners who have experience with performance assessments, or maybe those who are now studying it at the collegiate level.
Sure.
I'm sure there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we're not like Alex and I, we're not standing on a soapbox trying to say that this is the way. We're really just looking at it by like what we want to give our students, like what we want to invest in our students with the time we have in the classroom. And we want them to leave with a certain level of knowledge, but we also want to be able to look at what we taught them through performance, very authentic assessments. I don't have this down perfect, Alex. I'm pretty sure you don't have this down perfect, what the balance is. But there is a balance, and it is valuable. I can tell you for a fact that I'm working on it in my classroom that I'm working in now. It's important. And you know, I'm glad we talked about this for our first episode, because it is... I'm sorry, not our first episode, our first content episode, because it is important, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, we've been in talking with some of our colleagues in our education program and receiving feedback from various people that have listened to our first episode. It's a lot of people that have various fields of interest, a lot of not just social studies educators, but also we have a lot of English teachers. We have a lot of reading specialists, science, foreign language, elementary ed, special ed.
We have people that are listening to this podcast that aren't even in education. They're just interested and they're invested because their kids, their neighbors are in education.
You know, even for our listeners that might be a boss or might be high up in a certain company organization, or maybe for our listeners that are just starting out, that maybe are just recent college graduates and they're in their first job. This is a type of thing that it with performance assessments and with these unique assignments, they're applicable to the real world. Mm-hmm. And I think as for our listeners that might not be as involved in education, I'm sure they're thinking back to the time where they got to do the fun interactive project in their middle school or high school.
Right.
And that might have been something that helped spark a different interest, or it might have been something that they are even taking with them into their current jobs, whether it be in a meeting or maybe it's a planning period with their boss or with their research group. It's definitely something that doesn't just apply to education. It doesn't matter if what your career path is. I think this is something that everyone can appeal to,
for
sure.
Can take something from, absolutely. We did get a tweet this week that I wanna get into. It was from Miss. Let's see, where's the handle?
So at Mr_DTRattan. Thank you again for participating.
Thank you again.
So his question was: do you see C3 standards opening the door for standardized performance tasks? So Josh, I know we've at least talked about standardized performance tasks a little bit.
Right.
But do you want to just touch real quick on what a C3 standard
Absolutely.
Is?
Absolutely. So the C3 standards came out from the NCSS, the National Council of Social Studies Educators. Dom, thank you for your question. If you're not in social studies education, I'm sorry. The three guys that have really been communicating come from a social studies background, but we'll definitely address it. Absolutely. The C3s stand for, or the stand for College, Career, and Civic. I really like this because two of the three C's are not academic, right? They're career or civic. They're, the C3 stands are aiming to increase the rigor, the density of the content that the students are interacting with. It's not going to be so much about here are the standards, here's the content. C3 standards wants to push students to inquire. It wants to push teachers to have essential questions and almost hooks or things to get their students engaged to inquire in a question. Starting a lesson with a question and exploring that idea further into the lesson and have students kind of come to their own conclusions. So I like the inquiry approach to this. I think the explanation is valuable. It's not always going to be student-centered, but I think it allows for explorative thinking, and I think it allows for opportunities into performance assessments as well. I think it's very valuable. I think it's gonna there's going to be opportunities for it more than there was before. So I applaud NCSS for putting these standards together at the national level.
Absolutely. And again, with that question, it's not necessarily just C3. I know for all of our listeners out there in different fields and with different pieces of content, go look at your national organization and see what kind of national standards that they have, so then maybe you can take your knowledge from performance assessments and graphs and see how you can incorporate those into your lessons. So I think that pretty much wraps up our show for today, Josh. That was a very nice conversation. I really enjoyed talking about our different policies, or not our policies, but what's going on around the nation and what's going on down in Texas. I think that's really important for our listeners to take away with.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really applicable stuff we talked about today. I have a lot of fun. I always have fun talking to you, man. Guys, thanks so much for listening to our podcast. We want to continue the conversation that Alex and I have had today through social media. It's really valuable to continue the conversation. We really want to facilitate a community that discusses these things, not just listens to us talk about it, because you know that would be just boring, right? So our social media, think about joining our Facebook group, Two Coffee Teachers, and definitely follow us on Twitter at the number Two Coffee Teachers, at Two Coffee Teachers. You can also leave us a voicemail for our next episode at 443-300-8908. Give us feedback, give us a shout out, ask us a question. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, and it'd also be a big help to all of us if you could rate our podcast on iTunes. That is the best way to put it out there and to other people who may be interested in what we are doing at our community and growing our pool of listeners. So thank you so much for being a part of the Two Coffee Teacher podcast. Keep up the good work in the classroom and in your respective fields without needing that second cup of coffee. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
I can see the sweet sun pouring down in the strawberry sky. Tall grass dancing down by the St. John's River.